You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudy. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again. And as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. This week in the studio with us, we have a Dear Prudence celebrity. We have someone who's from every week's closing credits here in the studio, Steve Lickteig, who's the executive director of Slate Podcasts. And I'm pretty jazzed for the two of us to be able to give advice together. So many worlds converging. But first, oh, my friends. Oh, my sweet darlings, do we have something to talk about? This week, while writing the live chat, I learned something. I became wiser. I became more experienced in the ways of the world because I was informed of something I did not previously know about. And let me tell you, it was a real doozy. Somebody wrote in because they had recently been asked to leave a friend's child's birthday party because they had made a joke about birthday spankings. Friends, I had never heard of birthday spankings. I was not familiar with the concept of birthday spankings. If, like me, you hear the phrase birthday spankings and you think, that's not a thing, apparently it once was. It is a thing where adults, grown adult human beings, spank children, not necessarily their own, apparently, on their birthday to, I guess, commemorate the fact that it is their birthday. They spank them. Once for each year they have been alive. This was something human beings once did to each other. They don't now quite so much, which I think is probably for the best. And I managed to talk about that in the column about how probably this person is probably not a monster who wishes to strike children, but was definitely guilty of not reading a room well, not apologizing when they had the opportunity, and just in general kind of making an inappropriate comment about a little girl. And I should have realized, whenever you talk about some kind of big cultural shift, like the fact that spanking and corporal punishment used to be more prevalent in, you know, mainstream American culture 20 and 30 and 40 years ago than it is now, what you are going to get is a lot of emails from people who want to let you know that they got spanked and they're fine. So now my inbox is jam-packed with emails from mostly middle-aged men who really want to let me know that they were spanked as children. Especially on their birthday, and they found it really fun. They really enjoyed it, and they've turned out great. There's not a whole lot I can say to that other than, thanks, man. I'm glad you're doing well, because I am. I am glad that you're doing well. But I also don't, there's not a lot I can do about that except, I guess, just, like, hold that information. And, like, now I know something else, which is that, like, Dave from Phoenix enjoyed getting spanked on his birthday. Thanks, Dave. And that is, I think, always kind of fascinating when we talk about shifting norms, right? Like, time only moves in one direction. It moves forwards. Things change. It doesn't always mean that the thing that people used to do that they don't do now meant everyone who did it was a monster and everyone who doesn't is enlightened and good. You know, part of what changing norms means is it's not necessarily something that was objectively bad. Like, I don't know, littering. It's good that we litter less now. That was objectively bad. And it's good to do less of it now or for it to be less socially acceptable. But sometimes things just change. Like, people used to get really dressed up to fly on an airplane, and now we mostly don't. And you can sort of wish that things were different. You yourself can choose to dress up when you fly on an airplane, but we're not going to go back to those days when everyone was festooned with pumps and pocket squares and fedoras and whatnot. Those days are gone. And it's kind of like that with something like birthday spanking. You know, when spanking was more of a overt and accepted part of our society, it was fine to have a sort of lighthearted birthday spanking tradition because everyone was on at least a similar page about spanking. And now we're not. And so now joking about something that a lot of people no longer do and think it is good not to do to children, that shit doesn't fly. And that's just reality. Time moves on. Things change. And even if you were spanked as a child and you turned out well, it's not necessarily because you were spanked. And if nothing else, please, you don't have to tell me that you enjoyed being spanked. You can just quietly think that to yourself and maybe delete that email. I'm glad you're doing all right, but you know, there's really nothing I can do with the information that you guys are sending me right now. So with that said, I think we should dive right into this week's podcast. And on that jarring note, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I have to tell you, I was birthday spanked.
Were you?
Yes, it was a thing.
Wow.
I hate saying this is going to really hurt. I am a middle-aged man.
Sure. But you didn't email me about this, so you're doing great.
I did not.
Yeah.
I can. Would you like me to? I can tell you all the details.
I just told everyone to cut it out, so don't.
I was, you know, and these were not vicious, monstrous spankings. These were taps, love taps, if you will.
Great.
Where they, so say you're turning 8, you would get 8, and then a 9th one, it was one to grow on.
One to grow on. What? Okay, so bearing in mind, this is totally anecdotal. You grew up in 70s, 80s?
70s uh-huh. in rural Kansas.
What age did it become pretty, like, you don't birthday spank this person anymore? Like, was it 12, 13, 15, 20? Like, did people do it to adults?
Yeah, they did. In fact, there's home movies of my mother being spanked by my siblings.
I'm sorry. I've never snorted on this podcast.
So I think what happened is this. You're spanked as a child at your birthday. And then when you hit sort of high school and into college age, you are spanked by your peers.
Okay.
And then as you grow older and become like a mother or whatever, then it reverts back and then your children spank you.
Your children? Wait, so birthday spankings are like reciprocal across generations?
Well, at least where I grew up. I don't know if it's true across other places, but that's what I remember as a child.
This is remarkable.
It was a loving gesture. It was seen as, it's interesting too, because, you know, spanking was part of my childhood growing up. I mean, I was spanked for punishment.
Guys, this is the greatest episode of the show we've ever done. And from now on, I'm going to ask everybody about their experience with birthday spankings. Please continue. Steve, go ahead.
I guess now I think, wow, what a mixed message this birthday spanking is sending. Now that I look back on it as an adult, because I'd be spanked for doing something wrong. And then on my birthday, this joyous occasion, I was also spanked.
So I think I actually have something in my own life that I can kind of compare this to, which I feel very excited about. And that is that when I was growing up, in the summertime, if you were having pool parties, it was not uncommon to unexpectedly push somebody in the pool, like as a joke.
Right.
And that was like right up until the middle of high school. Definitely, like it's for sure horseplay. You're probably not supposed to throw people in pools. It could be dangerous, but definitely something we all did. And then right around the middle of high school is when everyone started getting cell phones. Now I would never push someone in the pool because there's a decent chance they have a $500 computer in their pocket. And if I push them in the pool, I will have just like fucked up their entire social and professional life for the next couple of days until they can get a new phone.
So technology is saving millions of teenagers from being humiliated at the pool.
Right, because again, you're not a monster for pushing people in the pool when it's kind of a norm. But now that that's shifted, like if I were to do that at a pool party tomorrow, it would be really weird because we seem to have all stopped doing that as a society and it would be jarring. Like I imagine, you know, you probably grew up in a situation where like spanking was fairly normal. But like if you were at a children's birthday party now, probably, Steve, I don't think you would say, let's bring back birthday spankings.
Right. I forgot the original context of this is that someone brought this up at a children's birthday party.
Yeah, like in the year of our Lord 2017, not like in the 70s. Now.
That ain't gonna fly on the East Coast. Like that may still be a deal, you know, in Kansas.
Sure. I mean, spanking is not illegal. It has not been completely like universally wiped out. But generally speaking, in this country, it's not. You wouldn't go on the news and talk about how great spanking your kids was.
No.
Probably.
And I would never bring it up at a birthday party.
Right, because you understand people have some very strong opinions about it. So there's that kind of bad judgment of, like, I think most adults are pretty aware that spanking does not mean what it did in the 1970s.
And I wouldn't push someone in a pool.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't FYI. Do that either. I would have done that at 13. I would have thought it was very funny. And mm-hmm. now as an adult, first of all, there's the phones. Then I also kind of understand some people really hate it. Some people find it really embarrassing. I didn't feel that way, but my experience is not universally applicable, which I think is probably just the letter, the lesson of that letter, right? Is that if you enjoyed something, it does not necessarily follow that everyone else enjoys it.
Because I bet you did not think that I was going to say I was the recipient of birthday spankings. Not, we don't know each other particularly well.
We are not close,
you and I.
I'm
sure you were like, oh, yeah, no. But you're thinking, Steve Lickteig wasn't spanked on his birthday, probably.
But now I know that. I guess I could go, I don't know, get a journal of things I now know about spankings and just add that to all the other data points that I've been given this week.
I would read that journal.
Steve, we gotta answer some questions, my man. This is the greatest day of my life. I cannot tell you how much I've thoroughly enjoyed this weird, weird introduction. Okay. So let's totally leave that behind us. Let's move forward into the future. Time only moves in one direction. Will you please do us the honor of reading the very first letter?
I will. Last summer, I was one of four interns at a medium-sized, nationally known company. One employee, Brian, was very popular within the company. We got along well until he made several perplexing comments to me in front of other interns, including, "You used to like me, but you're over me now. And see, this is why we can never be together." Once, he touched my back when he walked past. Brian and other employees would often go to a nearby shop for lunch and bring food back to eat at their desk. One day, we both coincidentally went to this shop at the same time, and he tried to convince me to stay and eat with him, which he never did with other employees. After my internship, he tried adding me on several social media networks. Brian has a wife and two kids, who I've met. Having previously been assaulted and stalked, I became extremely leery of Brian and avoided him. What troubles me is that I never told HR. Brian is a good employee and well-liked, so I think people would disapprove of my accusations. And with my past, I may be overreacting. But I also worry that a less cautious future intern would find themselves in trouble. I no longer work there. Is this too little too late or worth telling an HR rep? I'm still in college and unsure how involved will I have to be. Help!
Yeah, so you mentioned you thought this was an interesting letter, and I found it interesting, too, because it there's certainly no smoking gun in either direction where I'd feel really confident saying, you're definitely overreacting, or Brian definitely knowingly and intentionally crossed a line. Was that kind of your read on it as well?
Yeah. Men are awful. Okay? Let me just say that.
Okay.
We have this problem of, and I say, I'm speaking very generally here, of course.
Right.
But this, I know this Brian guy. Like, I've seen this guy. I've worked with this guy. They think that they are, you know, as attractive in some way, whether it's physically or through personality to this younger, I'm assuming this intern is much younger than
she
Brian.
Says that she was in, that she's still in college. To be fair, I don't think that they actually mention their gender. Based on the situation, I assume that this is a woman, and I think that's probably the case. But
you know what? You're right. But I think guys like this think that they are you know, somehow attractive to younger people, and they push things to a certain boundary, and knowing that it's sort of tantalizing and titillating for them. Mm-hmm. And they know that they believe and hope that it will never go beyond that. But once he starts trying to add like the social media network stuff, I mean, the comments are awful. The social media thing is one step too far. The touching on the back is, you know, please. So I think he didn't, but you're right. There's no smoking gun here. He's really an annoyance mm-hmm. more than anything, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that she needs to necessarily go to HR about this. I don't think that she should.
Yeah, I think my first thought is, how would it help you, or would having that information on file be useful in the future if he did cross a line more overtly with someone else? So, you know, letter writer, I think on the one hand, which is not to say that you should never do something if it doesn't directly benefit you, but that's something to bear in mind. This will not help you in that company. And it is possible if it got back to Brian, if he figured out who had possibly registered some sort of complaint or note, that could potentially hurt your chances depending on how influential he is in his field. So that's a relevant data point. The other is, if you are not filing a claim yourself, I'm not sure how useful HR is in that department. I think HR is very limited in terms of what they can do. And again, that's not to say it's never worth doing this sort of thing, but I think to bear in mind, if you did get in touch with them and just say, hey, I've been thinking about this. I realize that this may be really uncomfortable. And I just wanted to like let it be known in case something like this comes up again with a future intern so that there is a record on file. They may write it down. They may not. They may bear it in mind. They may not. So just to bear that in mind, I think. But yeah, the tricky thing, all of these are things that could have been said by a generally well-intentioned person with a slightly skewed sense of boundaries. They could have been said by someone who generally has a pretty appropriate set of boundaries at work, but periodically crosses a line. Or they could have been said by somebody who knows exactly what they're doing and is predatory, right? There's this sort of little, like when a shark attacks, first it will kind of bump up against you just to sort of gauge whether or not you'd be like an effective victim. And so a lot of the times, like people who are predatory at work will start with something that's like, wait, what was that? And it's very plausibly deniable. And all of the little things they've said or done by themselves don't add up to like a total violation of appropriate behavior, because they know that if they opened with that, more people would report them and they would get in trouble. So they start small. And if you weren't receptive to or didn't seem like nervous or overshadowed or receptive to those, then they might back off such that you would always wonder, did I make that up? Did I invent that in my head? Meanwhile, they are on to their next victim because they're playing a numbers game, repeating the behavior until they get the response that they're looking for. And that's when they cross the line. So just to put that out there again, I can see ways in which the things he said would have been like inappropriate in the moment, but not necessarily part of a pattern of being predatory. I can see other versions where he's doing exactly what he wants to do on purpose to try to see if he can, you know, cross a line with you. It's just hard to gauge. I think
and there's a chance that he's. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
There's a chance that he might really be clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And think that he is just being fun and funny. The social media thing may be the thing that crosses the line, because as a man of a certain age, I'm very aware of. I work with a lot of younger people, male, female. I'm very leery of the friending
right.
on Facebook.
And yeah, and I'm so aware there are some professions where social media is a bigger part of it. But again, that wouldn't necessarily then be the sort of profession where you would only add someone after you stopped working together. I guess what I would say is he's not necessarily, I can't tell you whether or not he is a predator. It's fine to be uncomfortable with the things that he said, and it's fine to reject his social media advances. And if all you want to do is get in touch with HR and say, you know, an employee said the following things that made me feel uncomfortable. I'm no longer there. I'm okay. It wasn't anything totally overt. But I just want this to be on record so that, you know, in case it comes up again, the company is aware that he's come close to crossing a line before. I think that's something you can do. I think you should sort of ask yourself, does it feel worth it to you to kind of revisit that old experience at that old company? But yes, I think you could do that if you wanted to.
I think that I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that it would be, does it change anything if Brian was the same age as this letter writer or, you know, a fellow intern and doing these exact same things?
I think so. I think, you know, whenever there's a big power imbalance, that always affects how you read a situation. And if this was another college age person, I think maybe a more appropriate response would be, you know, please don't joke about a possible romantic connection between us at work. That makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, turning down the friend request is thanks, but, you know, I'm not interested in developing friendships with my coworkers. That would maybe be a more appropriate response. Because again, like if you're a younger person, you are sort of learning the ropes of how to behave professionally. And they do not necessarily have the power to either fire you or help you advance in your career. But the difference between that and like a middle-aged popular employee who does have a certain degree of job security, especially in comparison with an intern, you should know better than to kind of joke about again, like, you know, I can understand like some colleagues who are maybe friendly with one another kind of joking like, oh, this is why we could never be together. It's maybe not the most appropriate thing in the world you can say, but it could happen. But that's like, you know, pretty unequivocally, like not a great thing to say about your college age intern. You know, just don't joke about dating your interns. I think that's a good rule of life, especially when you are like married and middle aged. Don't do it.
It's good advice.
Yeah. So I think I would come down on you can. I definitely don't think anything will come of it, but I also don't think that this could necessarily like torpedo your career. It might give you some increased peace of mind. You can also feel free if people ask you what your internship was like, especially if they're considering working there. You know, you could say, I had a pretty positive experience. There was one male employee who a couple of times said or did something that made me feel a little uncomfortable. And I would keep a weather eye out for him. And I think that that's, you know, fair, it's specific to your own experience. It might make you feel a little bit like you were helping other people make great decisions about how to look out for themselves. And I'm just good luck. I'm glad you're no longer there. And I'm glad that he didn't escalate any further and that he seems to have backed off now. All that's really good. And I'm excited to move on to the next letter. I love every once in a while addressing questions about adult birthday parties because I feel like I can bring someone the gift of a certain sort of freedom. But I'm going to go ahead and did I read the last letter? Who did? I think I did. You read this next one.
All right.
Steve, do it.
All right. I'm doing it.
Awesome.
I just had my 50th birthday party this weekend. One set of cousins canceled 15 minutes before the party was supposed to start with an incredibly ridiculous excuse. And one friend did not call and did not show, and I haven't heard from her in response to a text. Another no-show called 3 days after the party with an okay excuse for not showing, but no explanation as to why she couldn't call before the party. I'm furious. Since this was at a restaurant, it cost me for their meals. I am trying to talk myself out of sending them a bill, exploding at them, or pulling the same stunt on the next invitation they send me. What is the best response to this kind of rudeness?
Well, I can tell you three responses that are not the best. Number one, sending your friends a bill. Number two, exploding at them. Or number three, returning the favor the next time they have a party. So those are not your three best options. I'm happy to be able to tell you at least you should not do those things. Steve, what are your opinions on like adult birthday parties and that kind of real sense of my birthday, someone messed up on my birthday? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, So I just had a milestone birthday with my wife who turned 40.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And to her, you know, we had a big party for her. And we were very aware that you're asking a lot of people to come to an event like this. We did not, you know, we covered the bill. So it wasn't that anybody had to pay anything,
sure,
but we did ask them to come to a thing. And for a lot of our peers, get babysitters and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, some people, very few people didn't show, but a couple of people didn't show, but they did definitely give, you know, reasonable excuses or whatever. Not even reasonable. They just gave, it's fine. They gave an excuse and we're like, no, don't worry about it. We were reasonable people in that regard about this. And, you know, I'm coming up on 50 in a couple of years. And so I'll probably have a thing, maybe.
Sure.
I don't know, but I feel like it's a little bit like you don't get anything in between, right? It's like you get the big ones. You get like
the
30,
classic
40,
Patton
50.
Bit.
Yeah, exactly. And then after a certain time, you know, that you get to be president, right? And kill someone, I think is the thing he ends up with.
I think so too.
If you get to be 120 or something. So I think that this letter writer is completely overreacting. I'm sorry to say, I don't mean to be so blunt, but this is too bad.
Yeah.
This happened. You got to move on. I mean, I think it is rude of some of the people, certainly, but I think you just have to say, you know, some people just do things like this and there's no way around it. And I hopefully still had a great time and that a lot of great friends showed up, I'm assuming and I'm hoping.
Yeah.
And that a few people didn't make it. So be it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would, I'll soft pedal yours maybe 15%. But I'm generally on your side, which is, yeah, absolutely. I think as an adult, it's great. I think if generally the people in your life make you feel loved and celebrated, if they don't make a big fuss over your birthday, or even the moderate fuss that you wish they would, then that is okay. Like if there's a bigger question of like the people in my life are always disappointing me, they never show up, I do all this for them, they never return the favor, great, address that. But like if it's just someone didn't come to your birthday dinner, you know, you are not 11 years old. Your dad didn't just like fail to attend your softball game. This isn't a movie where you had to blow out the candles by yourself on a cake. Like, you're okay. You know, 50 is kind of a big deal. I get that. But yeah, again, I don't think that this is like the worst thing that one person can do to the other. If you feel so moved, when you are able to have a rational conversation, like when you are not at the level where you want to send somebody a bill. And first of all, you know, in the future, it sounds like maybe you like prepaid for a set menu. Maybe don't do that in the future. Maybe find an alternate way of arranging things where you are not on the hook for something if somebody can't come at the last minute. It sounds like that was really stressful and frustrating for you. So consider doing something different the next time you try to throw a party. But yeah, like the cousins who had a ridiculous excuse, if you guys are fairly close, like wait until you are feeling a little less enraged and just say, hey, I just want you to know it really hurt my feelings when you canceled last minute for my birthday party. It seemed kind of implausible and it hurt my feelings. That is an okay thing to say. It is okay to say I am disappointed, I am hurt. It's not okay to explode.
That's right. I agree with you on that for sure. She should be able to talk to her cousins about that.
Yeah, and it sounds like there were three people who didn't show up. Maybe possibly four. One friend didn't call and didn't show, and you haven't heard from her in response to a text. I think that's, you know, it's possible. Again, I'm totally speculating. It's possible there's been something going on between the two of you, and this friend has felt the need to distance herself, and that's worth investigating. But absolutely, like, you know, you can't hunt her down. If she doesn't want to talk, she doesn't want to talk, and you'll have to accept it seems like she maybe does not want to continue being friends. But you can absolutely call and say, like, hey, you didn't show up to my birthday, and I haven't heard from you, and I'm kind of worried. Are you okay? Is everything all right? I'm feeling kind of adrift here. That's totally okay to say. That's not ridiculous. You're not being selfish. You're not throwing a tantrum. But sending a bill, that is too much. Exploding is too much. You're allowed to be hurt. But this is also something that happens. This is like a friendship misdemeanor, not a felony.
And can I speculate too?
Speculate
away.
I
like speculating.
Absolutely.
This is a 50th birthday party. I'm
he or she. We actually don't know.
Oh, he or she.
Yeah.
The letter writer says 50th birthday party. I'm assuming that it was probably a fairly big event, like several. It wasn't just close friends, maybe 20 or 25 people, which you tend to spread out. Like, oh, I knew that person 10 years ago. I'm going to invite them to my 50th birthday party. Or they've been in my life for a long time, but we're not particularly close right now. And I think there's one thing that comes up that's possible here is that some of these, the friend who didn't call and didn't show, you know, they may have like social anxiety. They may have felt like, oh gosh, I don't really know this person like I used to. I'm not going to go.
Oh, I'm totally going to call bullshit on this speculation. If that's something you've got going on, then don't accept the invitation. RSVP maybe, not yes. Or tell your friend and say, I'm not going to be able to make it. I'm not doing well today. Sorry, Steve. I'm not on board with this one.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I do know people that have done this, that are like, oh my God, I can't go because I have social anxiety issues and I can't make it. I'm not saying it's right.
Sure.
I'm just saying that may have happened.
Sure.
And then the 3-day party, I guess what I'm getting at here is these people seem from this very short letter to me as outliers in this person's life.
Right. Right. This was not like nobody
came. Close. Right. Even these cousins may seem like outliers to me that I don't know. I got a feeling that this wasn't, if these were her very, I'm sorry. I don't know why I keep saying her. It could be a man.
Sure.
I'm awful. This is men are awful.
You don't have to flagellate yourself anymore, Steve. I promise.
Although you're welcome to if you need to. I will continue to do so.
All right.
That these people are outliers, and maybe if they were close to this person, then this letter writer could say to them what they're feeling. But because they're not close, they can't.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're so upset.
Man. All right. Well, I think we have answered that as best as we can. And I'm really excited about this next one because this is just the right amount of petty that I'm like, oh, I could talk about this for 100 years. This is the most important thing and we need to fix this. So the subject line of this one is just living with mom as an adult. I am an adult, temporarily living with my mom, paying a very reduced rent. I'm leaving in August and paying $200 a month until then. I am finding myself frustrated on a regular basis by some of my mom's quirks. One of them is that while I will spend quite a bit of time cleaning and loading both of our dishes, she's one of those people who believes you need to pre-wash dishes before putting them in the dishwasher. My mother will come by, turn the machine on, and then later make a big deal about how she already did the work of running the dishwasher, so the least I can do is put them all away after. Drives me nuts. I'm looking for validation that A, it is indeed bananas to act as though literally just pressing a button is equal work to washing, loading, and putting away dishes, but also validation that B, I just need to let it go because I forfeited any right to feel irritated by moving in here. Also, do you have any tips on easing dish dispute-related frustration? This is great. This is I love it when somebody has a really clear sense of what they want from me. And I like that this is just, look, tell me I'm right, but that I need to go along to get along anyways, which is fabulous. I'm going to throw this out there. I might be a little bit more on the side of your mother, not in the pushing a button is the same thing as unloading the dishwasher. But I also rinse off my dishes before I put them in the dishwasher because, you know, not all dishwashers are incredibly powerful, and sometimes it's really frustrating if you put everything through the wash and then they come out still with like some food crust on it, and that's no fun.
That's right.
Do you wash your dishes before you put them in the dishwasher?
You know, I don't, because I feel like that's the job of the dishwasher. But my
wife
does.
Well, if your dishwasher does that, that's great. Like, if your dishwasher is that powerful.
It doesn't do that. It doesn't. It should do that. That's what I'm saying.
So your dishes are coming out of the dishwasher still dirty, and you have to wash them again?
Not all of them.
But like regularly, like some every cycle?
No, it's a problem. It's a problem that it's something I need to look inside myself and decide
Steve,
why
I need
am
to
I
drill this down.
This.
Exactly how often are you opening your dishwasher and finding still dirty dishes inside? 10% of the time? 20?
20 to 30% of the time.
That's a problem, my man.
That's a problem.
Yeah, okay. You got to get your act together.
And they're the dishes that I don't rinse off.
Yeah, and it's harder because they've been through a drying cycle. So now that it's crusted on even more intensely. Yeah, Steve, get your life together.
I have to say, at the risk of this sounding like a Seinfeld episode, there's something really wrong with washing your dish before you put it in the thing that washes your dish.
Sure, but you know what, Steve? You're never going to win this argument with your dishwasher because your dishwasher is just going to keep being a dishwasher and you're a human being and only one of those things is capable of change.
Well, that's
Steve, you're almost 50.
Problem.
You can't fight your dishwasher for the rest of your life. You need a better nemesis.
Yeah, you're right. Damn, what am I going to do?
I turn your life around. Rinse your dishes off before you put them in the dishwasher.
I've staked so much on that.
No, I totally hear that. I am locked in an eternal battle with my dishwasher, too. This is about the death of the ego, Steve. Next time that you're faced with your sink, just think, I'm going to die. After I die, I'll be forgotten. And in 100 years, it will be as if I was never here. I accept that today, just for today. I accept it. The dishwasher has won. I will rinse the dishes. I will diminish. I will go into the West. And the sun's going to rise tomorrow, and that's okay.
But maybe they'll launch this podcast into space.
Maybe they'll launch this podcast into space where no one will listen to it. There's no guarantee that this is going to be a popular podcast in space. We are getting far afield, which is letter writer.
How old do you think this letter writer is?
This sounds like maybe a post-college thing, but this could be, honestly, this letter writer could be 60 years old. This is an eternal battle between parents
and
children.
And his 90-year-old mother is
absolutely
is on his case, on her, his or her case.
Yeah. I mean, yes, letter writer, I am here to validate you that it is bonkers. If your mom is not loading and preparing the dishwasher, she's just throwing in the soap and pressing a button. That is not the equivalent. That said, as you know, I do think this is worth letting go. I think that if you spend a lot of your time living with your mom, arguing, you know, down to like a tenth of a decimal point, who's doing the majority of the dishwasher work, you're going to feel frustrated and like you always need to be keeping score. And I think a better approach is to think I'm getting incredibly reduced rent. And also this person probably spent a lot of my childhood doing my dishes for me on my behalf. Mm. I am going to, until August, do maybe 40% more dishwashing than I would otherwise. And that is an acceptable compromise.
I think that's exactly right. I'm a father of two children. They're young now, but they will one day not be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about, and I'm not bitter, but I do a lot for them.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking one day they may move back home, God forbid, and I will expect a great deal of them.
Absolutely.
Frankly.
Yeah.
And
time to pay
up, kids.
I may
not give them reduced rent. Yep. Yes, exactly. Do it or get out. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how that goes. But I think that, this person needs to just suck it up.
Yep. And, you know, I wouldn't advise this to everyone in a similar situation. There's a lot that this is dependent on. But I would say, as a matter of fact, like, if she says that to you, cheerfully just say, like, absolutely, Mom, happy to. And in fact, you can even forestall this. I pressed the button, so now it's your turn. By doing it before she gets a chance to say that, like, take away that moment so that instead of feeling pushed into doing a chore like you're 15 and dragging your feet, you are instead like doing above and beyond, and you're like the really helpful person in the house, and you're just like, psh, the dishes are already put away. What are you talking about? I'm on it. And you may find that that feels nicer. So give it a shot. And yeah, everyone rinse your dishes a little bit. I'm not saying you have to like immerse them in sudsy boiling water and like scrub them clean and then put them in the dishwasher. Just, you know, hit them with the faucet for a minute.
Well, there's no, just to defend my laziness.
Sure.
There's no chunks of food on
right. You're not just like taking them directly from the table, not even bothering to scrape them and throwing them in the dishwasher.
Right. Right. There's just residue.
Yeah. I hear you.
Okay.
Okay. So we will upgrade you to just like garden variety kind of lazy human as opposed to just like totally feral. All right.
I can live with that. Yeah.
Good. Glad to hear it. All right, we've got two more voicemails. Again, this is 2 weeks in a row now that I've recorded voicemails, and I'm very proud of myself.
Hey, Prudence. I'm 52 years old, been married 30 years this year, have two kids, 19 and 16. Already told my husband I'm gay/lesbian, already told my kids back in November. And I'm trying to figure out, I hate doing damage to him. I care about him, but my husband and I have been like roommates for 10, 15 years, and there's, you know, we're just a roommate relationship. I'm just trying to figure out how to leave this marriage without destroying my 16-year-old who's left at the house.
Man, this one gets me. This is just painful, huge stuff, and, like, I'm just so, like, congratulations, first of all, on coming out and, like, coming to that understanding of yourself, and also I'm just so sorry that you and your family are going through this right now, and it sounds like it's painful, and it sounds like I could hear a lot of pain in your voice, like you're really afraid of damaging your kids, and I just feel for you, I guess is kind of what I want to open with. I think one thing that is great to do is to, and I say this all the time on the show, take your 16-year-old to therapy. Find like an LGBT-friendly therapist, obviously, but like this is, you know, 16 is a pretty significant age to have your parents go through a divorce, and to have your parents go through a divorce because of somebody's sexuality is also pretty big. And I think it will do. I mean, both. I would recommend you to help your 19-year-old as well. But you know, if they don't live with you, or if they're more financially independent, or if they don't want to, I think it's a really good idea to maybe even go to family counseling together over the next couple of months, just to kind of talk through. Like what everyone's thinking and feeling and what they're afraid of and what's painful and what's difficult. Like, I think that would be really, really helpful. Even though your goal is not staying in this marriage. I think even to go to family counseling with the goal of getting divorced as well and as amicably as you can, and in kind of paying attention to what your kids are going through, I think that will be really helpful to them. Steve, I don't know if you had any kind of thoughts to jump in with or.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel for her. This, not only is it a divorce, but then there's sort of this coming to terms with her sexuality, which she, sounds like she has for some time mm-hmm. known this about herself. But it's not just leaving a marriage to carry on as a heterosexual into another relationship or as a single person, but now she's seeing herself as a lesbian. I mean,
right.
and living that life. Which, and you're right, the kids are probably have a little bit of whiplash over that, or. As kids tend to be very perceptive, saw this coming, you know, years ago, or we had a real sense of it. I don't know from this note or from this voicemail what the husband's feelings or reactions are here, but my general feeling about this is she owes it to herself to be happy. Mm-hmm. She is not doing her husband or her children any favors by staying in this marriage that does not allow her to be who she is. That initial moment of ripping off the Band-Aid and you know, walking out the door is hard. But in the long run, I feel like it will end up being a good thing for the family, especially if she embraces her life post-marriage and lives it to the fullest and becomes this person that she wants to be.
Yep.
Then that'll be not only a good model for her children, but it will be good for her overall life going forward. She's young, you know, 52. She's got many years ahead of her.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel bad for the husband. I don't know, again, like what he's feeling, if he sees this as well or if he's oblivious to it. But, you know, two unhappy people together is not a good thing.
Right.
And it never creates a good situation across the, you know, think about the unhappy holidays that they all have to look forward to together.
Right.
You know, so on and so forth. So I think she needs, I love that she's thinking about her kid.
Yep.
Here, but she ultimately needs to think about herself.
Yeah.
In the situation and make that step out and do it efficiently and quickly while still maintaining a sense of, you know, of thinking about the others in the family.
Right. And, you know, you already came out to your kids and your husband back in November. Like, that's huge. So I think that it's wonderful that you've already taken that first step. And now, as you think through how to prepare them for presumably eventually no longer having a roommate relationship, having a co-parenting relationship, hopefully having as, you know, respectful and affectionate a co-parenting relationship as is possible. But I also just want to throw this out there. I know we talk a lot kind of when we are talking to somebody who is on the on the verge of getting divorced, and we'll say something like, it's more important for kids to have two happy parents. If being together and being happy is impossible, it's better for the kids for you to separate. And I do think that there's a lot of truth to that. But I also think sometimes we say that because we want to move past the discomfort of all the potential responses that kids can have to divorce. And I think it's in part because we don't want to make it sound like we're saying to somebody, you're not allowed to get divorced because it might hurt your kid. So just suck it up and suffer. And that's not what we're trying to say. But I do want to acknowledge the possibility, like this caller talked about worrying about destroying her 16-year-old, which suggests that her 16-year-old's response has not been totally like zen and fully self-actualized and like a 45-year-old's response. Like, it's not like, oh, good for you, this is obviously painful, but I know we'll all get through it. Like, they're probably responding like a 16-year-old, which is to say, badly. And just to be aware, like, it may be true that your kid was the difference between having parents who act like roommates and having parents who are divorced and one of them is now an out lesbian. Like, that's a big change, especially for the kid, because the kid was not involved in that aspect of your marriage. So, you know, if you're getting a response from your kid that's like, why can't you just stay roommates? I was fine with that. That worked for me. I just kind of want to acknowledge that possibility, that that may be a response that you're getting from your kid. And I think to bear in mind both that, absolutely, there's no way this is going to be the best experience of your kid's life. This is not going to be the best thing that ever happened to him. That said, this is also something that you guys can get through, that people have gotten through this exact situation before, and that it is possible to get to the other side of this, to have a loving and an affectionate relationship with all of your family members, and for the divorce to not be the most traumatizing thing in your son's life. Like, those are all possible things. Get yourself to PFLAG if there's a PFLAG chapter near you, so that your kids can see other kids who are going through something similar and maybe share about that in peer groups. That's super important. And just to bear in mind, like, this won't destroy your kid. It may be painful. He may lash out. He may say unkind things. It may hurt. But it's not going to ruin his life. And even if it's hard right now, I think it's still important and necessary work for you to do. I don't think there is a version of this where you stay successfully closeted and married to your husband forever, and that's good for you and your husband and your son. And so I do think that it is worth doing the work that you are doing right now. And to also just bear in mind, it's going to take a while. And 16-year-olds are often really shitty. And if he's shitty about this, don't feel like that means you are a monster or should stay with your husband for the next 20 years. That's just, it comes with the territory. 16-year-olds are already going through a lot, through a divorce and coming out on top of it. His response may not always be ideal, but if you guys can, you know, try family counseling, try some PFLAG meetings, be as loving and kind as you can while also maintaining a certain sense of, like, this is my life and I do need to be able to make decisions, especially, like, at 16. Like, he's not a little kid anymore. That doesn't mean he's not important to you, but you can't base all of your decisions on your 16-year-old anymore. Like, he's becoming an adult, and you guys need to start doing that work of, like, detaching. And not detaching, like, goodbye, float off into space, see you never, but... you know, you can't base your future romantic relationships around what your teenage son wants. Whew.
Wow.
It's hard stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It is. It is. And I don't think it's going to get awesome tomorrow, but I also do think that you guys are on a good path, and it will get better for all of you slowly and with time. Steve, we did it.
Wow.
From birthday spankings to our own deaths to dishwasher buttons and... coming out, we handled it all from first to last.
Yeah, I feel like you could probably just, the podcast now could just end. Like, it's all good.
We absolutely did it all. Not. Now I got to get through everyone else in the credits. I got to get our theme music composer, Robin Hilton.
Oh,
I got to
right.
get Andy Bowers, the chief content officer at Panoply.
Oh, that guy.
Somebody from iTunes. I got to get Audrey in. She's sitting right across from me and she's like shaking her head. No. So I guess that she's not going to come on the show, but I think she should.
Oh, I think she should too.
Well, Steve, thank you. This was
fantastic. It's a great experience.
Absolutely.
It makes me feel like it helps me be I'm just going to sound really cheesy.
Go for it.
Bear with me. I'm being vulnerable.
Good. At,
I feel like a better person.
Oh, you know, like, absolutely. Every Tuesday afternoon, I feel like a pretty good guy.
You take a few minutes to like think about other people's problems and it makes you realize that, hey, you know what? Things are going okay for me and I should be more grateful about it. And also, I feel bad for these folks who are having trouble right now. And I'm glad that hopefully I was helpful and you were helpful and we all helped them, but I maybe not.
Yeah, and someday it's going to be my turn in the chute.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And then hopefully I'll do a voicemail to you and you can help me.
Absolutely. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope we get to have you back on sometime soon.
Thank you.
Listeners, before we close out for the day, I want to take my turn on the wheel of time and acknowledge that while at present I am the person saying, come join us in the future, we don't spank as much as we used to, that my day will come when I will be saying to my grandchildren, you know, we used to do something when I was young. We threw people in pools and they will be horrified. Or I'll try to explain that we used to drink cow milk and they'll say, you did what to cows? And I'll say, well, we, you know, manually masturbated bulls and then annually impregnated cows and then took away their calves and we drank the milk that was intended to turn baby cows into full-size cows. And we did that pretty regularly and sometimes we made cheese out of it. And I have a feeling our grandchildren are going to look at us and say, that is just twisted, perverse, horrifying, and I can't believe you did it. And I'll be like, yes, but cheese was very good on pizza. And they're not going to like that answer. And I'm going to be the person at parties who's saying, like, cheese was a good idea. And all the, like, beautiful vegans of the future will be like, you're weird, Grandma. And I'll be like, ah, but I'm too old to change. And I'll just, like, be in the corner thinking about cheese. So the point is, I know time is coming for me too. The day will come when I will say, this thing was normal when I was 17. And other people will say, that has no bearing on what we do right now. And I'll say, but it should, because I'm the only person who's ever really existed. And no one else will want to hear that. So I am ready and waiting for the universe to spin that wheel and send me down the chute of history. My day will come. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts, and Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. Andy, if you're listening, why don't you come on the show? Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you like this show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops. I'm not like advocating for any of us to start or stop consuming dairy products. I think it's really weird, right? Like if you ever sit and think about how we utilize dairy products, it's weird. Like you have to acknowledge, even if you love it and you think it's fantastic and you like eat cheese five times a day, you're like, it's weird that we do that to cows and like not other animals. Like if someone tried to give me a glass of pig milk, I know I'd be horrified. And it's like, why? Why do I distinguish between the milk that pigs produce and the milk that cows produce? And the answer is like conditioning. Sorry, this is like the kind of conversation you have with your high roommate, like sophomore year of college, who's like, do you ever really think about like why we drink milk, man? Like, what's that about? So, please enjoy hearing it from me, a sober 30-year-old weirdo.